start and then leave, so.
I will open the Joint Committee on Legislative Audits for March 7th, 2017. We have actually one action item on the agenda, and then we have some informational presentations. We will go to the work session on acceptance and review of the local government shared revenue report. As you may recall, we reviewed the draft of this report in the last meeting. Do you want to go through it again just briefly?
Just very briefly, this was a review that was conducted during the interim for the most part. It came out of a request and some work that was done last session regarding whether or not funds, statutory shared revenues that were already going to local governments could be further prescribed in terms of what those were spent on. So we took a look at those as well as just kind of some providing a background on some of those funds. And again, the findings basically came out having a discussion of that if there's new revenues, looking at prescription of those is appropriate, but that there really shouldn't be a change to the current statutory shared revenues in terms of that. Although there is some of the recommendations include having the Transparency Commission take up the issue of whether or not these funds are easily transparent in terms of how they are shared and then how they are used, as well as whether or not we should, going forward, do more work on looking at the shared programs and when there are audits of certain programs, including our local government partners in those program reviews to make sure best practices are spread between local governments as well as with the state. So that's kind of in a nutshell the findings of that review.
Is there a motion to accept the report?
Yeah, Mr. Chair.
Yes.
I move we accept the review of local government shared revenue report.
Okay. Is there any discussion of the motion? Is there any objection to the motion? Seeing none, motion carries. Please note that Representative McLean is excused. Mr. Secretary, would you like to come forward? I don't know if you're bringing up anyone with you or.
If only if I get in trouble.
Please begin.
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair and members of the committee. I'm Dennis Richardson, Secretary of State for the State of Oregon. And I've been in office for 8 weeks. And I have only 46 weeks to go. 46 months. I'm in for 2 months. I've got 46 months to go and maybe longer depending on if I get rehired. The purpose of my being here today is to kind of introduce to you the work that I'm doing and my understanding of the roles of Secretary of State, the relationship that I can have with our legislative committee, and the vision for the state. As you know, as Secretary of State, I am the chief elections officer. I am the first contact for businesses that want to do work in the state of Oregon. I am also responsible for maintaining the history of our state and the heads of the audits division to ensure that the people's funds are well spent. My understanding and role of that of the last one, which is most relevant to this committee, is that the Secretary of State's Audits Division has the key opportunity to serve as a general accounting office, a GAO, a government accounting office for the state of Oregon, where we will be able and should accept that responsibility to follow and work to assure that people's money is well spent. And this is done through fiscal audits, performance audits, and IT audits. We currently are looking for the right person to be the director of the audits division. And it needs to be someone who understands the importance and really cares about implementing with our great audits team the principles of accountability and transparency and dealing with the financial affairs of the state and oversight of them through audits in a way that restores greater trust to the people. My relationship as Secretary of State with this legislative committee, I believe, is to provide a source of research and cooperation. I mean, we have the constitutional duties to be separate, but we're all working in the same direction. We want to provide information and help that will enable oversight to take place in a more effective manner by the elected officials. And so I'm looking forward to opportunities to help our audits division serve you in your work providing oversight to the legislature and to the various committees. As far as the vision for our state is concerned, in this role as the head of the auditors and the audits division, I believe that we should increase the focus on information technology audits, and it may take additional staffing for us to do that, but I'm very concerned about the vulnerability of our state, and especially when we have, you know, such an operation where it's all the agencies are like links in a chain, and if a hacker can attack the weakest link and get inside, then that person would have the ability to go to maneuver throughout our state financial and public records and privacy and all the various aspects that are contained in our records. And so I want in the audits that we perform to have an IT capacity or part of almost every audit, so that if whether it's a fiscal audit or a performance audit, that we ask certain questions in every audit to help ensure that we that every agency and every commission and every district, every department that is being audited is using proper techniques for encryption, is using proper protocols for passwords protection, and whatever is needed to help ensure that they aren't the weak link that would allow the privacy of the people and the affairs of our state to be hacked. I'm delighted with the opportunity for us to have greater opportunities with our performance auditors to help not just do an audit and make basic recommendations, but also to include best evidence practices to help the policymakers to see what is being done in similar situations in other states or other jurisdictions. It's one thing to say we have a problem here and it needs to be corrected, and why not add to that and say, and we've done basic research and we found that there's three states that have a similar situation that have dealt with this problem, and here's what they're doing, so that it can be considered by the policymakers in their decisions as to what to do with these recommendations that are coming in. So I'm excited about the opportunity to serve you and to serve the citizens throughout the state, and I'm open for any questions you might have of me.
Any questions? Senator Riley.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I really like your emphasis on IT that you're starting to do. I understand you're adding some IT folks possibly to your staff, and and I'm interested, very interested in seeing how that goes. As you know, IT is my specialty and something that I'm really interested in maintaining oversight on, and I'm very looking forward to working with your auditors and you on that area.
Well, thank you, Senator Riley. One of the reasons that I made the decision I did to hire Leslie Cummings is because not only is she have an MBA and a PhD, but her training in computer security is as good as I could find anywhere. And so it was important to me to have someone who really understood those items, so that we're not just getting reports, but can actually keep up with what's being done in other states that are leading the way, because Oregon should be leading the way in IT security, and we'll start with our own department and expand that as we can.
Other questions for the Secretary of State? Senator Devlin.
Yes, Mr. Secretary. I'm going to touch upon an issue that has been a discussion with previous secretaries of state, and it's an issue that's a little tenuous, and it's actually an issue where I clearly understand the position Secretary of States have taken, and I clearly understand the positions the legislature has taken. And that is that the statute that govern audits appear to give this committee a greater role than has been traditional for this committee. In a sense, in terms of requesting certain audits be done by the Secretary of State, and then occasionally you will actually get actual bills that will be introduced that will actually require the Secretary of State to do certain audits. Secretary of State, sort of rightfully from their standpoint, have always maintained their independence. But what I would hope we would do is we would have a kind of a relationship, I've defined it, I'm not using the proper terms, like the People's Republic of China and Taiwan has.
There are things, can we quote you
on that? There are things they clearly disagree about, but because it's in their mutual interest to actually find ways to gain agreement, that they find agreement. So,
Mr. Co-Chair and members of the committee, I welcome it. I thought about it. I've reviewed the Constitution. I've reviewed the statutes. I think it's a mistake for either side to become so turf-oriented that they forget that we're all working for the same end. And it's been valuable for me to have been on the other side of the dais and have only one or two staffers and be doing my own spot audits without staffing. And so I believe that it's a primary goal of this committee and the legislature to do oversight for the people. You're each elected by your districts to do just that. But you don't have the staffing to really do the fiscal and performance oversight that you might like to do. And so you can either create a new organization called the Legislative Audits Committee, or I don't mean committee, but division, where you, like Utah, has 28 auditors in the legislature's audit team, and then they also have an elected official who is the chief auditor for the state, and he does the other audits. But I think that's an expense, and it's not the way our life is. The life that we have, the situation that we face, is that the Secretary of State has 72 auditors, and hopefully that number will increase because of the important role that we're going to be doing to help each of you to do your job. And so as we discuss our budget in another committee at another time, I hope that you'll consider what a deal it is for Oregon to add a few more auditors to our capacity, since we'll provide that for the legislature without you having to have your own department, because we're going to be working together.
Madam Chair, I will note that Secretary of State is asking for greater public expenditures. So
we'll leave it at that. Senator Thatcher.
Thank you. I'm not sure where. Don't take me wrong when I say this, please. It's my understanding that the Secretary of State has a constitutional obligation and function to do fiscal audits. The performance audits were given to the Secretary of State by the legislature, and it's my opinion that we could take it back. Setting that aside, how many of the auditors actually do both the are they all involved in both fiscal audits as well as performance audits?
No, we have two divisions, and because I'd like to not guess, I would invite Mary Winger to come up and give us accurate information on this to answer your question.
Chairs, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Mary Winger. I'm the interim director of the Audits Division. Right now, we're authorized 72 FTE. Of those FTE, 33 are financial, 27 are performance, 7 are IT. We have one person who does hotline, and then we have municipal audit function. So about 38% of our audit resources are spent on performance audits.
Thank you.
And just to follow up,
yes,
if I
please.
May. Okay, so it's always been something I've been bringing forward over the years to say that since the legislature gave that ability, to the Secretary of State's office to do performance audits that we, you know, we could house it within, just take those 27 people that you have and put them over in LFO or whatever, make a new office, but it wouldn't be redundant. It would just be different and in this branch. And even though I've been promoting this over several years, I'm not going to stop now. So just saying, I think it's a good idea for the legislature to be able to have that ability and, I guess, flexibility and, I don't know. I just think it's a good thing for a legislature to have, like most other states have.
Co-chairs, members of the committee, Senator Thatcher, I certainly agree it is within the domain of the legislature to create a redundancy in the staffing, because we have staff that can actually do either side. As far as the Constitution, we have the right to be doing the audits. We're controlled by the budget that you give. You know, I mean, that is the control you have. If we don't have enough money, then we end up having to sue because it's unconstitutional for you to deprive us of the ability to do our job. Certainly, I respect your approach, and I hope that it doesn't get legs.
I understand. With all due respect.
You know what?
Bless your heart.
Let me add to that a little bit. You need, to give me time to show with our audits group that we are cooperative and able to do that which you would like to have done. And if that's taking place, then you would have to decide, why would it make sense to shift and change and stir things up that way when you're getting the benefit of already having it be done by those that are very concerned about the very same things that you are, and that is effectiveness, economy, and efficiency of government. And, you know, nobody wants to see money be wasted. As Representative Barnhart once said to me, he said, Dennis, I like the fact that you're going after waste. Now, we may discuss or have different ideas how to spend what you save, but waste is not a partisan issue, and I certainly believe that, and our goal is to function in a nonpartisan way.
I appreciate that, but you will not always be there. That's just saying.
Thank you, Senator Thatcher. Representative Wissent.
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair. Secretary Richardson, looking over the ODOT's recent audit, your people have done a good job, and they put the report, went to the governor, their answer to you comes from a director or something. This committee, well, your predecessor talked about the fact that we really need to work together, as Co-Chair Devlin talked about, and maybe prioritizing or looking at what you're doing. But also, my background is I think we need to work together to put some power and some hammer behind the audits. My background in the military, when you get an IG report, you have to report every 30 days on what you're doing to correct those things. And if you do a really bad job, you lose your job. So we've talked about that as far as how we can work together to put power behind the audits or some enforcement behind the audits. I don't see that happening in the past, and I don't know if the committee completely agrees with me on that point. But so I would ask that we work together to try to see where, you know, you can give us recommendations or something, and we can take action as a legislative body. I would hope the governor, as executive branch, would also do some things within her authority to reduce or something. If you say reduce staff or something, if they don't do it, then we can do that through the budget process. But I just think there's a lot of audits, a lot of work that your people have done, but really professionally. But you issue a report, and this report is 2 pages or 4 pages by the executive branch, and that doesn't, if we're trying to save the taxpayers' money and eliminate waste and fraud and abuse, then I'm not sure we're accomplishing that.
Co-chairs, members of the committee, Representative Wisnett, we are making some changes already, which should help. As we had a meeting yesterday afternoon, we invited all the legislators that were interested to come and be briefed on the ODOT audit dealing with unbalanced bidding. It's just one little aspect of the bidding process, but it is a hole that can be manipulated by certain contractors to get low bids and then come in the back door and make it up through with overages. And anyway, so we will continue to do that. We're going to invite legislators to come for an embargoed meeting before it's released so that those that want to will know about the audit before it hits the newspapers so that they're prepared to deal with it. Also, it will allow those who have committee assignments in a certain area where the audit is covering to come in and be able to ask questions of the auditors and get their questions answered, which happened last night when both Senator Byers and Senator Betsy Johnson and others came. But I mean, those that were on, and I don't know everybody that's on the transportation committees, but they came and wanted to make sure that they could get their questions answered by the auditors. And so that's going to help make it easier to know where we're at. Plus, we're adding a one-page summary to the executive summary to the audit. Like, we have one page, and then we have a few pages on the ODOT audit, and then it's 33 pages is the actual audit itself. And while we mean to write those in a very stimulating way, it doesn't always come through as far as all the numbers. But so not everybody reads the whole thing. But the one-pager will enable the policymakers to do the oversight, and to, if they have specific questions, we want to answer those so that when Ways and Means is looking at budgets, part of that discussion is what's happening with these recommendations? What are you doing? And then there, I think it's up to this committee coordinating with us to do the follow-up on a fairly regular basis to help ensure that recommendations are not just being shelved.
Other questions? If it'd be okay, I'd like to just maybe add a little bit to some of the questions that have been asked, and I have a couple myself. And first of all, you started to mention something which was talking about, you know, really trying to make sure that the audit was complete circle, and so that you really, number one, decided how you're going to do the audit and when you're going to do the audit for timeliness and prioritizing. And I wanted you to speak to that just a little bit more, because there have been two audits that I've seen so far that were just behind the, you know, just a little bit behind the curve. They weren't very helpful because what had happened had already happened, and it was like reporting what happened. And so that doesn't always, you know, it may assist in some future way, but it seemed like the actual purpose of the audit was not timely.
Right.
And then the second piece of that is prioritizing. We all know that performance audits and financial audits have different risk factors. And whether the risk factor is because of resources being used or whether the risk factor is because of services that are either not being produced or whether the risk factor has to do with just a specific issue that may need to have some light put on it or spotlighted so that we can actually see what the overall goal of the agency, you know, is either accomplishing or not. What is your perspective, or what is your process for making sure that the audits are timely and that they really are taking some of these risk factors into account?
Madam Co-Chair, members of the committee, thank you for bringing this up, because I think it's very important for us to review this. The previous head of audits retired last year. His viewpoint was that when the when something is in the newspapers, it's really becoming an issue, it's the legislature's job to do the oversight. And so the audits division would essentially go and do audits elsewhere. And so I asked, so what about the fact that they don't have capacity to do the audits, they don't have the staffing, and we do? But it was his viewpoint. And so you're going to see a change in that. I want to have a small group of the auditors be on special programs. And they're the ones that, when there's a fire, they run to the fire, because the people need to have reliable information on what's happening. I mean, I ask questions on why has there been no audit on, you know, Cover Oregon or the CRC Bridge project, or no thorough audit on the Betsy credits and those kinds of things, where together it's somewhere close to $1.5 billion, and $1 billion of it is general fund. And it was because of that, you know, that wasn't, those areas were not priorities. So we will make them a priority when there are is issues that are coming up to the legislature. You're hearing about it, the legislators individually from your people, and you ask us and let us know what your concerns are, then we want to be able to focus it. Mm-hmm. And when we get information from a whistleblower, we will take action to follow up, you know, maybe real, maybe not, but we want to follow up to see where there's substance. When we get recommendations from your committee or any one of you, we will want to follow up because we want you to be able to do your job, and yours is the point of the spear for oversight for the legislature. I mean, as the statutes talk about what this committee does, it makes recommendations to Ways and Means and to the other legislators. They look to you to do the oversight and provide them with information, and we want to make sure that you have the capacity to do that.
Could I follow up with another one? You've mentioned two or three times that you want, and I think it's a good goal, to help us do our job or have the information so we can do our job of oversight. But it seems to me that we probably have among us some ideas of what would be helpful. And so putting sideboards on audits that with, you know, a criteria that we can say, now this would be helpful, this would really allow us to do some of that oversight that you think is part of our bailiwick. And so I want to know how open you are to having this committee work on some criteria that could be sideboards for any audit that actually would allow us to get the kinds of information, which, you know, we're not looking for anything difficult here, but I mean just to make sure that we're making the circle, whether it be a performance audit or a financial audit, and we could actually agree upon as auditors and as legislators that this would be helpful. This is actually something that when I look at a certain audit, I might not find it that helpful because maybe it's, yeah, you know, it's got weak conclusion suggestions, or because it doesn't have any in an area that I think is important, or because it doesn't really have what I consider to be the documentation that helps me do what I want to do next as far as oversight. So do you have thoughts on that? Or?
Sure, Madam Co-Chair, members of the committee, we are very open. I'm serious about us helping you with your responsibilities, and so we'd be very open to receive from you recommendations. Sideboards imply limitations, which could be, you know, that goes a little too far, because now that could become political, mm-hmm, to try and put sideboards so that we're not free to audit wherever we want. Mm-hmm. But if you're talking about recommendations on what would be useful to you, we would welcome that, because the goal is not to do audits just for the agencies. Mm-hmm. The goal is to do audits for the people and the people's representatives, mm-hmm, as well as help the agencies. And so if we can help you do your job by knowing what you would like to have, it would be helpful. Something else that would be, I mean, as we're talking, I'm telling my staff certain things that I haven't discussed with all of them. But one area is, and I mentioned this last night when on the ODOT audit, was this was a lot of expenditure of time and effort to do this whole audit, a full report on one little aspect of budgeting, okay? And that is the unbalanced bidding. I don't mean budgeting, but I mean budgeting for projects and bidding. And so I think that if I had been here last year, and if I was doing my job, and if I understood audits better than, or as I'm starting to learn, there should be periodic reviews to say, where are we going with this audit? Mm-hmm. Because if it was on bidding, and then you're finding out that ODOT is doing all that they're supposed to be doing for change orders and all of that, but there's one area that there's a problem, and this is unbalanced bidding, and that ODOT says, yeah, it could be a problem because we're not measuring it, they admitted it, and they're looking at software to help solve that problem, then we don't need to spend another 3 to 5 months or whatever the time would be and having a 33-page report. Do a detailed letter. Here's what we found. Here's what our recommendations were. ODOT is agreeing with that. Wrap it up early and go to the next audit so that not all audits will be treated the same, because not all have the same capacity to make a difference in your job.
Yes.
You finish, ma'am.
Representative, yeah.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Secretary, I'd like to go back to your comment you made about, I call it the quick reaction force. We talked to that in this committee before, and I think that's a great thing. We don't have the capacity, as you know, working in this building to research some of these things that come up that I think make this body and the entire state of Oregon government look bad. So any sort of quick reaction to say, hey, that's, you know, team that we could, I don't know if the co-chairs agree that we could task you to say, you know, don't spend a lot of time, but go see if you can find data to say right away this needs to be investigated or it looks like we're clean or something. I think that would be beneficiary to us and be able to answer the media or the public real quick. Thank you.
Co-chairs, members of the committee, Representative, wasn't it? That is our goal as well. Having been in your position without the capacity to do the follow-up, you're getting asked questions, and it's difficult. I never called the Secretary of State's office or the Audits Division to ask about it, but you have. Every legislator has a right to do that. Any citizen has a right to do that, and we will certainly take very seriously any requests or recommendations you have because we want to be of service.
Mm-hmm. Senator Devlin.
Thank you. Mr. Secretary, just a brief statement, then kind of a query, in a sense. I think it's actually a good idea to have this sort of instantaneous response team. The only difficulty with that is I think you'd have to be very careful in how you used it, because you could end up going left and right every 3 weeks, because there's always going to be some issue out there. You'd have to weigh what the gravity of the issue is. But some places, even some places you've mentioned previously to audit, there might be a way to approach something that I think would be of considerable benefit. One would be, obviously, we all know the sort of not very good history of Cover Oregon. We also know that a lot of things have been done then, since then, to improve the process for IT projects. But I can give you kind of a brief assessment right now. Some are going quite well, and there are a few out there that are not going quite well. And actually, some assessment of why some of our projects are going quite well and why still some of them are struggling might be of more benefit to this body than just looking in the background of what happened 5 years ago or even before that. Because there are things currently ongoing where we think we have some handles on some issues, and some things do appear to be being done differently. But we do have a few areas where we think that there are some problems still.
Mr. Co-Chair, mm-hmm. Co-Chairs and members of the committee, thank you, and I'm not aware of which projects you may be referring to, but we do want to begin, as soon as we have the capacity to do this, to have alongside audits where we assign as additional responsibility to one or two auditors a major project that is in process, so that if there is a problem, you don't find out about it after $300 million has been spent. And if it comes from one legislator, like in Cover Oregon, it may not be paid attention to. But if the Secretary of State's Audits Division sends a letter to members of the committee saying, be aware that this is going on and if there's a red flag here, then it would help you to be able to spot things on and give you greater resources. I mean, I really believe this is going to be valuable to this committee. And with all due respect for Senator Thatcher's goal of having a more responsive performance audit team, it would make so much more sense, in my opinion, to add part of what her budget would be to create that to our budget, and then you get the benefit at a deal.
Yes, Senator Riley.
Thank you. I wanted to just follow up on Senator Devlin's and say that I would be one of those people who would like to point out to you which projects, and I'm sure Senator Devlin would be as well, which projects we think are having a problem, and you might take a look at them. That would be so helpful.
Co-chairs, members of the committee, Senator Riley, we would welcome that information, and we have to weigh everything we do with the capacity that
yes.
we have with our current auditors. But if we knew what is concerning you, then that gives us information. I mean, if we're willing to act on something from an anonymous whistleblower, we certainly would take action on something received from any of this esteemed committee.
Any other questions for Secretary of State Richardson? Thank you very much. Sure. Really appreciate this.
Thank you. It's nice to see you.
So our next item on our agenda is the discussion of the internal audit process. And I think we're going to hear from the Department of Administrative Services. And then there's a panel of agency internal auditors.
Chair McLean, members of the committee, I'm George Naughton. I'm the Chief Financial Officer of the State of Oregon. And Ms. McHugh asked us a little while ago if we'd come and talk a little bit background for the internal audit functions of the state government, what it is, how it operates. There are statutory requirements that larger agencies are required to have an internal audit. It's an absolutely critical function for us because it's really an early warning system for the agency directors in many ways to help them understand what their vulnerabilities are and to get a second look when things may make the agency director not quite sure they can send in a resource and really understand what's going on behind the hood in a way that becomes consultative for the agency director and helps them figure out which direction they may want to go in the future. It also works very closely with the Secretary of State's office as they do the external audits looking inside the agency. Today, I think what would be best for us is I've actually brought up Mr. Gehringer today. He is actually the administrator of the Governor's Advocacy Office over in the Department of Human Services. But for this group, he was DAS's chief audit executive up until about December of this last year. So he's been involved with the audit process with us. And we actually lost him because the Department of Human Services last summer started contacting us because they needed an external person to come look at the things that they were had going on in various field offices. Mr. Gehringer was sent over there, spent several months with them, and then they recruited him away from us. So he is a tremendous resource for us on a state level. When Mr. Gehringer gets done with his overview of what the internal audit process is, we've asked Ms. Cochran from OIA and Ms. O'Connor from DOC, who are both experienced internal auditors, to give you their perspective of what the work looks like for them. So with that, Chair McLean, I'll turn over to Mr. Gehringer and let him run.
Thank you. Thank you, George. Co-chairs Devlin and McLean, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Zach Gehringer. I'm from the Department of Human Services, Governor's Advocacy Office, most recently DAS's internal auditor. Just a little bit of background about the function, what it looks like, and how it's arranged in the state. Internal audit function is an independent, objective assurance and consulting activity at the executive level in the state agencies designed to add value and improve operations for state agencies. Well, it's governed by the authority given in ORS 184-360 and Administrative Rules 125-700, which govern the activity and what that looks like in state government. In fiscal year 16, 29 agencies reported meeting the criteria to have an internal audit function. Those criteria are biennial expenditures over $100 million. Full-time equivalent employees over 400, and dollar value of cash items processed over 10 million. So one of those three criteria, or all of them. Of the 29 agencies that were
explain that. Could you explain that last?
Sure. The last one is the most kind of squishy of the requirements. The dollar value of cash items processed annually exceeding 100 million. A lot of the agencies that meet that, most agencies will meet all three of these or two, so it's a lot less of a hurdle to define that third. The way that we've interpreted it in the past has been a lot of it is passed through of federal dollars is one of those that would be different than expenditures. But like I said, most agencies pretty comfortably meet the first two if they meet any of these criteria at all.
Follow up.
Yes.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So the first criteria is $100 million of general fund.
We haven't had to interpret this recently enough that I think it can vary.
Chair McLean, Representative Wisden, I believe it's actually total funds that we're looking at, the total amount of budget.
Okay, but follow up.
Yes,
so
please.
Then the third category is, you said that was mostly federal funds. So why? I don't understand the three. I'm not sure it matters.
So we do have members of the committee. It's co-chairs. I apologize. I didn't recognize everyone as. But we have had a little trouble defining that in the past. So that could be an item for further review for DAS owns these administrative rules, and that might be subject for a nice little look soon.
I guess the bottom line, Madam Chair, would be how many agencies are we talking about?
Sure. So. Co-chairs, members of the committee, We do have 29 that report meeting these, one of these three at least, these requirements. Typically, as I said, the first two are pretty easy to define. So those first two have qualified at least 29 agencies. Of those 29, 20 agencies do have an internal audit function that is governed by the rules set by DAS. And DAS procurement has a price agreement with six audit firms that can help those nine remaining agencies to have an internal audit function when they either don't have a position for internal audit or are seeking additional independence or additional expertise, for example. One agency didn't have the capacity in the past year to do an HR review, for example, so they got a firm from that list to do an HR review and got a firm with HR experience to perform that review off of that list. So in fiscal 16, out of those 20 agencies that have internal audit functions, they have 39 total staff. 20 of these agencies only have one internal auditor. DAS was one of those in that reporting year. Some agencies do have multiple staff, up to eight in the Department of Human Services. Another item we've been asked to speak about is what this work looks like, what happens to the work that internal auditors do. And I thought it would be helpful to discuss a little bit about, you know, kind of the rhythm and the cycle of that work. It starts, which is governed by ORS statute and internal audit standards. It kind of starts with a risk assessment. Statute requires the agencies have an annual risk assessment. This can vary, the methodology of this can vary by agency, but typically it looks like an auditor going out and meeting with management in some capacity in the agency, discussing risk and finding areas that are vulnerable in the agency, you know, by managers by manager's word, but also poking around and looking at things and being aware of what's going on generally. So auditors are typically involved in executive meetings where they're hearing what's going on and have some idea of that themselves. That can look different by agency, and the methodology can be surveys, it can be one-on-one meetings, it can really vary, and sometimes it changes year to year just to keep it interesting and get new information. This risk assessment will lead to an audit plan developed by the internal auditor that's typically approved by the committee to plan out the year of audit activity, the reviews that will take place. Also built into that period is consulting activity. So the internal audit function consults management on various kind of as-needed reviews. An item comes up to agency management's attention, they can ask the internal auditor to review that. Internal auditors also come up with proposals for reviews like that, too, based on what they're seeing. And that's kind of a give and take done in concert with the audit committee. Audit committees can vary by state, too, by agency, rather. The audit committee is encouraged to include external membership, but many agencies use their executive team as an audit committee as well. The internal auditor will typically report to agency head, either the director or deputy director, administratively, but functionally reports to the audit committee. ORS requires auditors to perform one risk-based audit annually, so this will be a risk item found in the risk assessment. And once every 5 years, internal auditors are required to audit agency governance or risk management process. That's defined in a few different ways in statute, but I don't have that with me today. What the engagement can look like, this is really oversimplified, but the engagement will look like so they've gotten the marching orders to go perform these audits in the fiscal year. They'll plan the audit, do the field work, report out to the agency, and then perform follow-up, whatever that might look like. The auditors follow up on recommendations at agreed-upon intervals. It can vary based on what's going on, but typically 6 months to a year, they're going to follow up on findings and seek input from the agency on what they've done to implement those recommendations. And DAS, I can speak for DAS at least, also kept track of Secretary of State findings, and we kept up with monitoring those implementation plans as well. Some additional responsibilities include consulting activity. Agencies or audit functions are act in an advisory capacity as needed, but do not write policy or oversee any management of the agency. So we maintain that independence, but can be available for advice. This activity is conducted with the rigor of an audit, but might be smaller in scope, may or may not generate a report, may or may not have recommendations. That can vary. So DAS does collect some information from internal audit functions across the state on an annual basis. All agencies that meet the OAR criteria mentioned before are required to report to DAS on how they're meeting, fulfilling that function. This is required information by September 30th every year, and DAS generates a report for this committee, as a matter of fact, every calendar year. DAS does have the authority to request copies of audit reports. Some agencies volunteer these on a regular basis, and others, I participated as DAS internal auditor in some peer reviews, so we got to kind of see how agencies performed that way. Agencies are required to have a peer review, depending on the audit standards they follow, every 3 or 5 years. So that's just mandated by whatever audit standards they choose to follow. And the DAS COO organizes quarterly meetings of state internal audit community through the Chief Audit Executive Council, which has membership from all of those agencies, but also is governed by someone other than the DAS auditor. So that covers my talking points, but I'd be glad to answer any questions, and I've brought a couple agency internal auditors as well.
Any questions? I had one. You indicated that once a year they have to do a risk assessment audit. So what was your definition of risk assessment?
Thank you. Co-Chair McLean, co-chairs, and members of the committee, I did it two different ways in the 2 years I was at DAS. The first year I simply followed up on the prior year's risk assessment. I came at a time that it was due in 3 or 4 months after I got there. So I did a simple follow-up. I met with the managers of each division of the agency and did a simple follow-up of the previous year's risk assessment. My second year at DAS, I did a little bit deeper dive. I did a pretty detailed survey to owners of – DAS has a fundamentals map of all – agency function. So I did a survey of all of the owners of DAS sub-processes that helped DAS achieve its mission of providing state agencies with support. And so every owner of a sub-process of DAS's overall mission got an email from me. This was something like 60 folks in the agency, some managers, some frontline staff, and used that as a starting point of conversations with division leaders. So I had a wealth of information to go off of. And kind of ranked them along with the agency on what was the highest risk and kind of developed the audit plan from there.
Okay. Other questions? Yes, Coach, please.
Thank you, Madam Coach. Co-chair, did you have any criminal findings?
Co-chairs, members of the committee, Representative Wisnett, most auditing standards would require us to report things directly that we find along those lines. So no, nothing criminal. We'll hear a lot of things that can be cross-reported to either HR or if we saw anything negligent that really needed like an outside view, we could report to the Secretary of State's Fraud, Waste, and Abuse Hotline. All of that would be taken into consideration, but it was mostly process level improvements.
Good. Thank you.
Other comments or questions? Okay, and I think now you have an agency internal auditors panel.
Sure.
Yeah, Chair McLean, we'll actually ask Ms. O'Connor and Ms. Cochran to join us up here. We'll step back and we'll be here if there's more questions as we come back. But again, this is Oregon Youth Authority and Department of Corrections, both experienced internal auditors and their own rights.
Good afternoon. Co-chairs, committee members, my name is Jody Cochran. I am the Chief Audit Executive for the Oregon Youth Authority.
Co-chairs, members of the committee, my name is Adrienne O'Connor, and I'm the Chief Audit Executive for the Oregon Department of Corrections.
And maybe you guys could speak up just a little bit.
So I think Zach did a great job of highlighting kind of what internal audit does, but Jody and I are here to answer questions that you may have about how internal audit functions within state agencies.
Both the internal audit function at DOC and the Youth Authority are different in their sizes. So let me give you a little bit of background as far as that goes. As far as the Youth Authority, we have one internal auditor. That's myself. And so all of the both assurance and consulting functions I do. and I perform those for the Youth Authority. With my experience, I've been there for about 4 years now.
Co-chairs, members of the committee, we have a total shop size of 3 people. So I'm the audit administrator, and we have 2 staff auditors at DOC.
Senator Devlin.
How internally within your organizations, one that is not really small, but it's smaller, and one that is one of the largest agencies that we actually have in terms of number of people, part of being an internal auditor is that you have direct access to the director or at least upper level management, and you have some degree of independence. Can you define how that's worked in both of your agencies?
Yes. Co-chairs, member of the committee. For the Oregon Youth Authority, I report directly to Fairbairn Pachuras, the director, administratively on a daily basis. But I also then functionally report to our audit committee. I'm very pleased to say that our audit committee does have 2 external members. Those members are external to not only the Youth Authority, but also to state government. We have a retired Multnomah judge as well as an executive, banking executive from the Portland area. And those members serve as the independence, they provide that ultimate transparency for the audit committee, really allow me to have a level of independence within the agency so that I can provide honest and complete observations to the director and to the agency as a whole. Like Zach said, there are no operational responsibilities or authority that I have. So I'm able to provide my observations without any concern about something that I may have a control over and have some biases on. So those external members are key to the audit committee and key to my independence. As a small group, my ability to provide both assurance functions, historical reviews, as well as consulting opportunities is limited to the amount of time that I have. And so it is a smaller agency, but there are also quite a few items that come up on an annual basis on the risk assessment and that are incorporated into the audit plan that I try to meet with just my individual resources.
Co-chairs, members of the committee. We are also in the director's office at Department of Corrections, so we report right to the deputy and the director, and we do not have, we're not in charge of any other programs within the agency. We also have a functioning audit committee, which is comprised of our executive team of the agency, and we've also onboarded an external member to help with the independence.
Yes, please, Senator Devlin.
For the DOC, do you still, my memory is not really fading, but do you still really have what we used to refer to as like someone or maybe several someones that are like an inspector general?
Co-chairs, members of the committee, we still have an inspector general's office who is separate from internal audit, and that gives the director and deputy flexibility in what they need to look at. The inspector general's office also does report to the director and the deputy director.
Can you distinguish between your roles? Because I know they are different.
Co-chairs, members of the committee, they are different. So the way I look at it is that they're kind of the investigatory piece. So they take a look at what has happened and investigate that and report accordingly. And we are kind of in the opportunity to take a look at what could happen, what are the risks to the agency, what things could make an impact to the agency that we might need to improve before it happens. So we're looking really at processes. The Inspector General's office has more than just investigatory responsibility, but they're kind of looking at things that have happened.
One last question.
Yes, Senator Devlin.
For both parties, do you have involvement when, both when an agency is notified of a Secretary of State audit, during the audit, and post-audit in terms of the agency's response?
co-chairs, members of the committee, yes, we try to liaise with Secretary of State as much as we can, because as you guys might know, audit lingo is not the same always as business lingo, so we're here to liaise for that. As far as hotline calls, we'll get calls from Secretary of State to follow up on those. Mm-hmm. And definitely throughout the audit process, we're involved. And also when it comes around follow-up time. So they've issued the audit, they've given us some time to implement, and then they're coming back to us to see what the progress has been made. Internal audit is involved in those processes for DOC.
Co-chairs, members of the committee, very similar process as with DOC for the Youth Authority. As far as my role, I really do help facilitate both those entrance and exit conferences with our staff and with the Secretary of State auditors. And then throughout the audit process, I'm checking in with them to make sure that their needs are being met. It helps me be informed that as an internal member, I'm also receiving some of their observations and making sure that if there's anything that they need or any assistance that they are finding difficult, that I can help with that, and then also communicating with any of our stakeholders and within the agency or external to the agency as far as the progress of the audit and how that's going. At the end of the audit, once those recommendations have been made, then I help facilitate the agency's response and then the follow-ups on an annual basis that they request from us. Internally, we are monitoring those recommendations and those responses on a more frequent basis, but we are required to provide written responses on an annual basis.
Thank you. Other questions? Well, thank you very much. Really appreciate that information.
Thank you.
Okay, well, at this time, that is actually the end of the agenda. I wanted to say that the next regular meeting will be on March 21st. Which will be Tuesday.
You could say May 21st.
But it would be March 21st, which would be Tuesday, and starting at 1 o'clock, and then we'll meet in between to talk a little bit about the agenda. So,
the Senate is starting to consider whether we should put in a request for this committee to meet during our long special session after the regular session.
Oh, okay.
Say that again.
I think he was.
Say that again, Senator.
What are you telling us here?
I think he was being funny, but our co-chair.
Glad to see he's got some humor. In
our co-chair had a joke.
I was paying attention. I was paying attention to what you said.
Yeah.
So at this time, then, I would like to adjourn if there's no other items that any member would like to bring up. So I'll adjourn the meeting for March 7th, 2017.
You're starting to sound like
Thank
a president.
You. 2017.
You're starting to sound like
Thank
a president.
You. For March 7th.